You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Romillo, credentialed reporter, the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show if you haven't already, wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. That's rockauto.com. Visit them today and tell them Locked On sent you. It's a great episode for you with Rob Mahoney of The Ringer, one of the best of the business, and he wrote a piece back in February about Miami showing signs of life, and because of a scheduling issue and some terrible weather in Texas, we were forced to push recording this. But it worked out with Miami winning six of their last seven before the All-Star break. We talked about the challenges of the season, Duncan Robinson, expectations of Bam Adebayo, and some potential trade targets, and much, much more. Here's my conversation with Rob. Back on February 11th, you wrote a piece called "They're Heating Up. Miami is starting to look like the team that left the bubble." And then we had some scheduling mishaps. You went through some pretty bad weather over in Texas. And finally, we're getting a chance to talk here. But since then, the Heat struggled, went on a losing streak, and then they bounced back with a win streak. Is anything, it's been like, I guess, over a month now, but or just about a month, but is anything sustainable over the last couple of weeks that maybe you wrote about in that first piece that you see has been something Miami has been able to duplicate or maybe even improve on?
Well, you know, this is all just an elaborate stalling tactic on my part, just trying to weather out that losing streak, let them get back on track.
It worked out perfectly. I mean,
yeah, I know, right?
I mean, for the topic at hand, it's like, it's great. It's like, oh, I wrote about them when they were on the 3-game winning streak. They won one more game after that, and then they won 6 more straight after that. So it worked out pretty well.
Yeah, they've been playing pretty well lately. But, I mean, sustainable is an interesting word league-wide, I think. And it really depends on the state of things with your health and safety protocols, with your injuries, how, you know, the state of different guys working in and out of the lineup and how much practice time you have available. So, you know, I think the main takeaway of that piece, honestly, was not a particularly sophisticated analysis. It was the Heat are good with Jimmy Butler on the floor, and they haven't had him on the floor very often. And in those games he missed, they were often missing other guys that were compounding that absence, you know, other ball handlers, other guys who in theory could help fill in for what you're missing when Jimmy Butler isn't out there. So, I mean, you know, news at 11, a team that went to the NBA Finals is good again. Like, I think it was really just a matter of time in terms of waiting for the Heat to sort some of their stuff out and figure out how they could function on a day-to-day basis without some of their key guys in the lineup.
Well, I mean, you say that like it's pretty cut and dry, and I feel like I've been trying to stay pretty positive for my listenership and for Heat fandom in general, but mostly you've seen a lot of negative responses during those last few losses there. It was in the midst of a 7-game road trip, and fans were staying awake here on the East Coast till 1 o'clock in the morning to see them lose a 20-point lead to a decimated Warriors team or a Clippers team that was missing 4 starters. And they have legitimate questions about whether or not this team is any good. And then you hear the talk about whether or not Miami was a fluke. And of course, that dates back a few months ago prior to even the start of the season. And I thought it was going to provide motivation for this team. And then they came out really flat. Of course, they wound up losing Jimmy to injury and then Jimmy to health and safety protocols and everything else. And I feel like this fan base doesn't quite know what to make of this team yet. And you make it seem like it's pretty, well, again, cut and dry that this is just a good team missing one of their best players.
Well, I think some of that is fair given the way they started the season. You know, just how flat they looked out the gate. And I'm sure in some ways very pleased with themselves, you know, in terms of if you're this kind of team, you just went to the NBA Finals, you have to feel pretty good about where you are. I thought, especially on defense to start the season, you know, when they were just kind of splitting games back and forth,
right?
You know, it just seemed like a little empty, a little vacant, like the same fire wasn't there that made the Heat such a formidable force in the bubble. And so, you know, between, you know, kind of ironing out those issues, just kind of getting up to the speed of the NBA season, really locking into the effort that they would need to have on a nightly basis, especially when you're missing core guys, between that and also getting, you know, just a healthier, fuller roster again is when I think we start to see the fuller, more complete version of the Heat, because that team is good. Like, you know, when this team has its top 8 or 9 guys all in uniform, that's a tough ask for anyone to guard and to score on, and especially to score on this year. I think the defense of late has been quite good, but you know, it's been tough for everybody league-wide who's had this kind of degree of health and safety issues to kind of get their season back on track afterwards. And I think what we're seeing now is the Heat at least closer to the natural momentum that you would expect a team in their position to have coming off of last year's playoff run.
Well, the counter argument to that is that the Lakers started off incredibly well. And yes, they weren't missing any key players or anything like that. But I know a lot of fans have said, you know, you can't blame the short offseason considering how good the Lakers look. And yeah, you know, they have two top end talents in LeBron and Anthony Davis, as well as a rebuilt cast. And one of the arguments that I've made is that maybe Miami invested so much emotional energy into the finals only to come out, you know, not winning the championship, that they lost a little bit of themselves along the way. I know that's kind of speculative, so it's hard to quantify, but do you think there might be any truth to that? Not necessarily that, as you pointed out, that they might be a little content or anything like that, but that just they just took so much out of them to get to that point last year. And that's what led to that flatness that we saw early on.
I absolutely buy that idea. And some of it too is just the Lakers relative to the Heat are a team that can afford to be a little flat for three quarters and still win. And we've seen that a lot from them this season, where like this is not, you know, even before his injury, was not the best season of Anthony Davis's career. This was not the most consistent possession to possession effort we've ever seen from LeBron, although I think he's been, you know, reasonably locked in for the sake of kind of getting all his guys into it and making sure that they're buying in, you know, as much as a really strong contender can in this weird regular season. So I think, you know, when you have LeBron on your team, you're afforded a certain latitude within a game to kind of come out with a little less effort, come out with a little less focus and still win, even if it takes overtime against the Thunder or something like that. Versus the Heat, you know, Jimmy Butler has kind of affirmed himself as being on that level of superstardom where he makes as big an impact on the game as almost anyone out there. Yes. And while we would like to think of Miami as a team that's balanced and democratic enough to withstand that, I think the realities of this season is showing that they are not at that level collectively without him.
Yeah, the flip side of that is an unfortunate side effect. You wrote about Bam Adebayo's improved offense, and while that certainly had been on display and still is to some degree, I think you'll find a lot of frustration amongst Heat fans that he just hasn't been nearly as aggressive enough. That mid-range game that we saw him use so effectively and even stretch out to beyond the three-point line just hasn't been there. He seems a little bit back to being the version he was over the last few seasons, where he's apprehensive to let it fly and not very polished around the basket in terms of his back-to-the-basket game. He does not have a low post game to speak of. He's athletic and explosive and can finish over anyone if he has enough space there, but he's just not great at creating his own shot, which is kind of weird to kind of, you know, put into when you think about, you know, Bam and thinking about that in context. He does not have a great offensive repertoire. Is how much of this is on Bam not being able to take a significant leap in this year?
Well, I mean, if you expect that of him, and I'm not sure to what extent the Heat did or didn't, that he would be able to fill that kind of role, then it's definitely on him. Because to me, that's the big looming question over everything that's been going on, the ups and downs of the Heat. Is Bam the kind of guy who you can crank up the usage dial when you really need to and have that lead to winning results? And I think so far, the answer to that's been a pretty, I don't want to say definitive no, but at least for the player he is right now,
yes.
I don't think he's there yet at all. And that may be the reality of his game, where he can be a star or even a superstar level player, but one who complements and fills out rosters and builds up other guys, but isn't necessarily driving you in the way that Butler and LeBron and some of these other great players do.
You know, it's you know, the conversation around that topic, and I'm glad you bring it up, as nuanced a perspective as you bring to it, because it becomes so reductive. It's like, well, he's getting paid max money. Max money equals 30 points per game when you need to win. And that's just not who Bam is. And look, he had two really strong offensive performances against the Brooklyn Nets. And I think everybody was seeing that and witnessing another level of his offensive evolution and expecting that to be the norm. Of course, they were missing Goran Dragic. They were missing Jimmy Butler. Those weren't necessarily indicative of what a healthy roster could look like. And so you're right to bring up the point that what you need from Bam is more about the filling around the edges, where he brings all the other things to the table, not necessarily 30 points per game. And so that's kind of hard for people to understand and take in, because it's just, I don't know why the conversation always tends to be about points per game, you know, especially now with the All-Star and, you know, midseason awards and everything else. It almost seems like we're just basically reduced to figuring out players who score a lot as if that's defining of their games. And for Bam, it's not quite that.
No. Yeah. I think we're still adapting, honestly, as a basketball culture in a lot of ways to the different kinds of players who are now getting paid. Right. There was a point in time when I think that was true. Max contract equals certain amount of, you know, certain expectation of points per game, of usage, of shots that you could carry an offense or at least a second unit. That's what your skill set would be. We live in a league now where Draymond Green's skill set is as valuable as many of the other high scoring stars in the league in a way that isn't quantifiable even. You know, like we're still very bad at even quantifying what someone does who doesn't shoot very much. And I think Bam is closer to that side of things than he is a high volume superstar. The optimistic projection, if you're looking at what the next few years of Bam's career could look like and if he can ever get to that point, would be someone like Nikola Jokic, who had these same questions as far as a guy who, you know, the bent of his game is to want to pass so much. And Bam is a little bit different. You know, he is a facilitator, certainly. I think his issue is more kind of feeling where he fits into a game and finding where he can be dominant or effective. And it's kind of an ongoing process for a player like that. But Jokic certainly has scaled up his performance to be not only the best passing big man in the league, but an excellent scorer at pretty much every level of the game. And so if Bam can keep adding things to his game, can keep refining, can keep finding ways to impact it as a scorer, maybe we can see that scale up. But for now, that's just not who he is. It's not really his disposition. And that's fine. The Heat can still be an excellent team with that being the case.
In the next segment, we'll talk about Bam's role on this team before breaking down some potential trade targets here on the number one Miami Heat podcast for the latest news, rumors, and analysis. You know, what's really hard to find is the right piece for your car. With the ever-increasing number of makes and models, it's hard to find any of these in a traditional chain storefront. And you don't want to go there. They're asking you questions. You're not sure what to do. You've got computers, the same as theirs, with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. Rockauto.com is a family-owned business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. You can choose from hundreds of manufacturers on their easy-to-use site. You'll get everything you need with just a few easy clicks delivered directly and safely to your door. Why spend more for the exact same parts? RockAuto.com's low prices are the same for everybody. Go to RockAuto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car or your truck. They go to the section that says, "How did you hear about us?" and write "Locked On" so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car or truck will ever need. That's RockAuto.com. Betting on the NBA doesn't have to be a guessing game if you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling. Get daily picks, blowout specials, wrong team favored picks, and Lee Sterling's lock of the day. Subscribe to the Locked On Bets podcast brought to you by betonline.ag, wherever you get podcasts. So in this section, I'll be talking to Rob a little bit about Bam Adebayo, Duncan Robinson, just overall looking at Miami season and the difficulties of the season, how Miami can just try to stay afloat with all the challenges going on. Here's Rob Mahoney.
I'm glad you brought up the Jokic comp because it's one I've made before too. And I've talked to, you know, Nuggets media folks, and they say there's still frustration about Jokic not being as aggressive offensively. And we've already seen a number of press conferences or Zoom calls this season from Bam where he just keeps saying, "I need to be more aggressive. I need to be more aggressive." And then the response collectively from Heat fandom is, "Well, just go ahead and do it." And I understand both sides of the equation. I kind of tend to be more on Bam's side of this, that I think it's not so easy for him to quite figure it out. You can't just turn it up a notch from one day to the next and say, "Oh, you know what? I feel like scoring 40 points tonight." And it's an interesting evolution for him, but I think he's getting more and more comfortable. We tend to overlook how young he is and, you know, how this is just his second year starting and he's already made such huge leaps. I'm not necessarily concerned with Bam's evolution. I think he's doing okay for himself and probably got snubbed of an all-star performance, but that's a whole other conversation. One person who was also getting some equal levels of frustration from Heat fans is Duncan Robinson. And you mentioned that a little bit in your piece, how he's being, you know, closely guarded. And certainly that's been evident. His shooting is just not quite as effective as it was last year. And I had a recent conversation with another guest and we were talking about Duncan. And maybe the problem was that we all expected him to maintain what was a historically good shooting performance from him last season. But there's a little bit of both. One, he was going to regress to some degree, but also the league at large was going to figure out how to defend him and how to at least challenge his shot-making ability. What have you seen that maybe has stood out about how teams are guarding Duncan Robinson?
Yeah, I mean, this is what life looks like when you're on the scouting report and you're a really prominent part of how teams are starting to attack the Heat with their defense. You know, the stuff that Duncan is seeing is not revolutionary coverage. Like top locking a shooter like Duncan Robinson is pretty much par for the course, being physical with him, holding as much as the rules will allow. All that stuff is pretty normal. And I think we're seeing Duncan start to adapt a little bit. You know, the occasional backdoor stuff I think has been pretty good. And it doesn't have to be in super high volumes either. It really is more a matter of keeping defenses honest and making them think about guarding so aggressively toward the three-point line. If you can even just get one layup here and there to balance out the defense a little bit, that's going to be huge for him. But, I mean, one of the things that I appreciate about the Heat is the way that they treat player development as such an ongoing project. You know, it's not a thing you do until you're 23 or you're 25. It's right. Something you do your whole career. And that's going to be the issue for Duncan. And for all guys who are like him, who, you know, aren't standout athletes. They come to the game with one or two defined skills who can impact the game in a very particular way. And other teams are going to try to do everything they can to deny that if they're good enough to warrant that kind of coverage. And the defense that Duncan Robinson has gotten this season is an incredible compliment. Now, the question is, can he respond and evolve in a way where he can still be a steady impact on a game? Or is he going to fall into this range of player who, you know, we've seen this happen to Kyle Korver in the past, right. For example, where if he's item 1A or 1B on your scouting report in a playoff series, you can take away 90% of what he does effectively, 90% of the way he's affecting an offense. And if that's happening, what else can he give you?
Well, you mentioned the off-ball cutting, and I think we're starting to see a lot more of that because he seems to finish at a pretty high level around the rim once he does get that open look there. But I also noticed a wrinkle a couple of games ago where Bam winds up setting a particularly high screen for him so that he gets enough space where he can just still use the screen and then get to the three-point line. And by that point, his defender is pretty much left in the dust. So to create a little bit more space for him, is there anything else that you think that he could implement offensively to get him more open looks?
That's a good question, because the Heat already as a team and as a coaching staff, I mean, they throw the kitchen sink at you in terms of freeing up some of these shooters. I think it has more to do with the balance of the floor. And that, you know, we saw this especially when they had guys out where you could afford to load up so much on a guy like Duncan because they weren't going to beat you.
Yeah.
You know, if with a quick pass somewhere else. And this is maybe the area where Bam has to help him out a little bit more, whether it's the handoff game, whether it's the screen game. Do a little more fake handoff and drive more aggressively. You know, that first step is really where the damage comes. If he can start blowing past guys when they expect that handoff into the three, you can start doing a lot more damage with that. But it's tough. I really do think with that, it's more of a team effort than anything in terms of just finding ways to put enough players on the floor. And honestly, this is one area where a guy like Iguodala can hurt you because, you know, for what he brings in terms of veteran savvy and defense, I think he's probably just one of those players at this stage of his career who's so much more valuable in the playoffs than he is in the regular season. Having a guy like him on the floor allows teams to tilt their entire defense towards Duncan, towards Bam, towards Jimmy, towards Goran, like whoever it is that's kind of initiating the action or even just trying to get something going off the ball.
Yeah, Iguodala playing way too many minutes for a player his age and as effective. I mean, look, they're almost at the point where they're relying on his three-point shooting on occasion just as a bailout. And those possessions where they wind up relying on those shots, just it's not great. And he's been able to knock it down somewhat consistently of late, but then, you know, he can go 3 of 4 just as easily as he can go 0 for 4. And so when you have that kind of high level variance, it's a dangerous place for Miami to live in. But the other side of that is also Jimmy shooting more 3-point shots. And I keep getting a lot of questions about whether or not he should continue to shoot that, even though he's shown over the last season or two that he's not a particularly adept shooter, at least not until the playoffs. And my feeling is yes. I mean, he's got to constantly keep shooting those. If they're open and he has that shot available, at the very least, he can keep defenses honest. And that's a big part of what you were just talking about, because I think you have that lack of shooting in the starting lineup, and then all of a sudden the defenses can key in on what Duncan can provide. And that's even when Tyler Herro was starting, his shooting was off the mark a little bit. Goran's been in and out of the lineup. There's nobody else in that roster or that starting lineup that really shoots a three. Kelly Olynyk's been struggling. You know, there's the threat of Olynyk perhaps is greater than his actual shooting ability. Yeah. And right now, I mean, that's just, it's the only thing out there, because you can't live with Kendrick Nunn's shooting. I mean, all that's been better over the last month or so. You keep expecting the regression to happen. So from Jimmy's side of things, I would expect him to keep shooting. I'm hoping that he keeps shooting, just because at least there is a threat of a long-range shooting possibility there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why the combination of that Olynyk threat that you mentioned and what Iguodala is and isn't giving you, that's a big reason to me why the Heat are one of these teams on trade watch right now. And I don't know what the packages look like. I haven't exactly canvassed the league in terms of who might make sense for them or fit, but that's kind of the spot. Really both big man positions. I think you could look at a proper backup for Bam, who could be a little bit more playoff dependable, but really that spot at the four where they could go a lot of different ways to kind of fill out that rotation and find some alternatives there, given what might be out there on the trade market.
Well, you totally torpedoed our third segment, because I was going to bring up some trade possibilities and see whether or not you might think they might have a fit there. I mean, we can still kind of gloss over it in glaring terms here, or wider terms. But, you know, I'm still curious as to your thoughts here, because, you know, you wrote about this in the piece, and I'm thinking so much of the season feels like it's just defined by the shadow of COVID-19 and what happened last year, especially for Miami, and how much of their performance is just unrealistic expectations. We talked about the fluke, you know, evaluation of this roster and everything else, but is it just about persevering through this season? Like, I know a lot of what defined the bubble talk last year was, oh, whether or not it gets an asterisk, but this season has been so difficult league-wide, not just for Miami. And maybe this is the one that's deserving of a huge asterisk, because you have players dropping in and out of almost every game. You have cancellations, you have travel, everything that's been so difficult for this team. And you wonder, can you evaluate anything about not just Miami, but almost any team in the league based on the difficulties and challenges of this season?
Yeah, I like the word persevering for that. And it comes up a lot when you're talking to players in terms of what their routines are like, what's changed this season.
Everything.
Everything is a great answer. What comes up a lot is just the routine of the testing, the frequency of the testing. And, you know, it's not a complaint in the sense that they're saying we shouldn't be tested or we shouldn't be staying safe, but these are incredible creatures of habit, NBA players and coaches. And when you're throwing things off, where you're being tested twice a day, where you're, you know, having to report at different times than you're used to, it really does throw off everything about the NBA experience. And so between all of those factors you mentioned, you know, most significant of which guys, you know, really being in peril to have tested positive and having to deal with the mental effects of that, of wondering, am I even going to be the same player again this season or beyond that? What are my symptoms going to be? Like, you know, I was just listening to an interview that Dorian Finney-Smith with the Mavs did a couple weeks ago or months ago when he had tested positive. He was talking about the hardest thing was the moment after he had tested positive, where doctors were telling him these are the things you could expect.
Right.
And that moment of figuring, kind of like waiting for the symptoms to show up.
Wow.
I do credit the Heat for persevering, as you put it, so far through some of the stuff that they've dealt with, but also dealing with, I think, the psychic toll of starting the season the way they did and being asked over and over, why aren't you as good a team as you used to be? Why, like, what happened to the magic of last season? And there are teams who experience that kind of thing and kind of get pulled apart by it. And there are teams who are able to kind of put it aside, you know, even if you don't use it as a rallying cry or, you know, bulletin board material or whatever, that you're able to digest it and figure out how to be a good team again. And it was interesting what you said earlier about Bam in his press conferences saying repeatedly that he needed to be more aggressive in the way that, you know, sometimes the way players and coaches say things in those settings can be turned against them. Can, you know, I'm sure Bam on some level is just trying to say a thing you can say in a press conference that isn't going to be controversial, which is, right, I need to be a more aggressive player. But there's also just enough truth to it that people can latch onto it and it becomes a narrative that could follow him around, even, you know, whether it's true or not. I'm sure there is some degree of truth to that as we've kind of bounced around with his game. But this is a particularly unique challenge this season, to your point. I think there's so much going on circling around the league right now that guys have to keep in mind, beyond just even the dangers of the pandemic, but the second and, you know, the secondary and tertiary effects of that.
We wrap up today's episode talking about some potential trade targets and much more here on Locked On Heat. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and the NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, reality TV, real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. So head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today. Receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. That's BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. And don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON. Need fantasy basketball advice? It's important that you have a reliable source, and more people trust Josh Lloyd, host of Locked On Fantasy Basketball, than any other podcast. Subscribe to the number one fantasy basketball podcast, Locked On Fantasy Basketball, wherever you get podcasts. Josh is one of the good ones. Wrapping up my conversation with Rob Mahoney of The Ringer, great talk about some potential trade targets and much more. I wind up coming across pretty positive about Miami's chances just because of the overall status of the rest of the league and that Miami has found a way to rebuild their identity from last year. I don't think it's necessarily as the same team as it was just last year, but a lot of the same qualities have been duplicated of late. So I'm glad that Rob brought that perspective. As a national media member, he sees Miami continuing to trend in the right direction. That's all you can ask for.
You know, it's amazing sometimes when you get a person from an outsider, quote unquote, outsider's perspective, how they can add nuance to a conversation. Because even as I'm listening to you talking about this, this feels like on any other team, or maybe on many, at least other teams around the league, any player like Bam in this situation would have said, well, I'm doing everything I can. And it would have led to like a source of in-house fighting. Instead, they're kind of all internally accepting responsibility and not turning on each other. So this is like one of those positives that has gone mostly overlooked. While we're all complaining about losing to the Clippers at 1 o'clock in the morning, conversely, nobody has turned on them, you know, internally. There's still chemistry in this team. They still look like they're close friends on and off the court. And that's a huge plus, especially given all the other challenges we've been talking about. It's been such a difficult year, not just for the NBA, but for people in general. And then to, you know, when the microscope is so attunely focused on what this team is and what they can be, and that they're falling short of potential, they still seem like they've been mostly positive. So that's certainly a good takeaway from all this. So I'm glad you mentioned something along those lines.
Yeah, I mean, the big question with NBA teams is not, will there be frustrations or will you fight over the course of the season? Because you will fight. It's, will that stuff stay in-house or not?
Right.
And, you know, it's our job to poke and prod and find it and find those stories and figure out what the tension points are. That's covering the NBA. That's the work of it. But in a lot of ways, their job is to prevent us from doing that and to make sure that these things are dealt with in a way that honestly is more healthy, that's more within the structure of the team and trying to digest it on their own terms. The Heat have always been pretty good about that, to be honest. And it doesn't really surprise me that they're doing that again.
That's true. Good point. Well, I do want to bring up some potential trade possibilities, but maybe this bigger question here. If you're looking at this roster and what's missing from it, you kind of alluded to it earlier, is it that you need a point guard, another additional ball handler, maybe even an additional defender in the backcourt? Or is it more about replacing or reproducing what Jay Crowder brought to the table last year? Because I think most people would assume it's a lot of the latter. But then you look at the shot creation, especially when Goran is missing as much as he has been, when Jimmy is in and out of the lineup, and you're wondering where that shot creation is coming from. There aren't a lot of options. Tyler Hero just isn't there yet. So in your estimation, would you say you need somebody more along the guard spot, or somebody like to fill in at the four that can kind of take over, be a versatile defender, et cetera?
I think the realistic option is the big.
Yes.
And some of that's just because in theory, you're getting that shot creation bump from Tyler Hero taking another step, right? Like that's kind of the spot I'm looking at when I say, why don't the Heat, why does it feel like they don't have enough shot creation sometimes? Why does it feel like this offense is spinning, but not really creating? And he's the guy I'm looking at in a lot of those situations, fair or not, given, you know, he's been in and out of the lineup too. But, you know, that's kind of the spot long term where I think the Heat are banking on that. And so to make a big trade, to trade for the kind of player who would give you that infusion of perimeter creation, I think would probably come at the expense. If, you know, if we're talking about the kind of player who could do that, maybe at the expense of someone like Hero or Duncan Robinson or Kendrick Nunn, who all of you have done nice things for them this season to varying degrees. You know, the big just seems like a more realistic spot for me in terms of what they have available, what a potential trade could look like and the machinations of that. I think I'm just banking still on Tyler Hero eventually to take some steps that he hasn't so far.
Yeah, I remember you and I talking about that last year when they were in the midst of the bubble. And I was particularly high. I think I was one of the more loud voices clamoring that Hero was going to take an evolutionary step. And it's been a struggle for him, maybe because, you know, he's only 21 years old and it's his second season, and it's been the most difficult, challenging season in NBA history. And of course, then there's the shift in his role where he was coming off the bench and then starting and then coming off the bench. It's just been a little difficult for him to adjust. So I think we're starting to see more of that confidence from him. The three-point shooting has been a little off. And so he's not quite the three-level scorer he was in the bubble, but I would expect that there's going to be a bump there in the second half of the season. I'm not sure why. Maybe I don't have anything there to base it on necessarily, but my feeling is that he's going to get to a little bit more of a comfortable rhythm. And I think this team in general is just going to get into a comfortable rhythm because they've gone through so much. And maybe this is where that persevering that we talked about earlier kind of kicks in. They've got one of the easiest schedules, at least as far as the overall evaluation is concerned right now. And they can, as long as they're able to stay healthy, they get Avery Bradley back, they get Goran back. And if Jimmy is able to avoid anything else, I like their chances of being able to be a pretty good team that can challenge any of the Eastern Conference top end talents. I mean, where do you see the Heat ranking in terms of, you know, Philadelphia, Brooklyn, Milwaukee, I guess, is still considered among the best teams in the Eastern Conference. Can Miami still challenge those teams as effectively as they did last year?
I think they probably dropped off a little bit, and that has less to do with them than the fact that the Nets just present a totally different challenge than any team did in last year's field, and that Joel Embiid has really ascended as a threat on the floor. And like that combination of things, you know, the Bucks kind of are who they are. I think Milwaukee by the end of this season will be better suited to play a team like Miami than they were last year. They're going to be a little bit better prepared for that. They're already experimenting with their own systems and, you know, making themselves more playoff ready. So I think they're going to be a tougher playoff out too. But beyond those three teams, I think Miami is the most compelling. You know, I don't really have a lot of faith in where the Celtics are right now, for example, and the rest of the East is, you know, very hit and miss depending on the night you catch them. Miami is the team that's really positioned to make a run at this thing in terms of getting home court advantage, maybe slotting as high as three if they can have a really strong second half of the season. It's just about developing the kind of momentum and consistency that they haven't had a chance to do given their lineup situation. And to your point about Hero, maybe the unique structure of this season will allow guys like him and really younger guys around the league, as we saw in the bubble, to have stronger second halves, to, you know, just with the way that the season was scheduled and how rushed it was coming in, maybe when they can finally get their feet under them, we can see them start to take some steps forward. And certainly in his case, take the steps forward that the Heat really need.
Absolutely. Now, you're not a Knicks believer, I take it?
Not particularly, no.
Yeah, same here. So I'll throw a couple of names at you just for the sake of my audience, and you can just gloss over them if you like, but anybody that stands out as far as being a good fit, or just a quick one hitter on whether or not they'd be a good fit for Miami. I think one of the biggest names out there as far as Miami's general interest in acquiring them is Harrison Barnes. What do you think about his fit in Miami?
I mean, he's been really good this season. You know, really one of the bright spots for a Sacramento team that, while fun, has been just a complete mess, especially on defense. I think he could fit pretty nicely for them.
So do I.
Gives them not only kind of that, as you were saying, that Jay Crowdery type role, but I think some ability to work between the cracks more so than Jay did, where he can get into the mid-range. He can kind of worm his way to the rim. You know, Barnes isn't the most explosive guy, especially anymore, but he gets there. He finds ways. He's strong enough to overpower some guys or just to get past them with a shoulder enough to use his length to his advantage. So I think that fit would be pretty good.
PJ Tucker, I feel like I keep telling everybody Tucker is not the player he once was. You can't keep expecting him to fill that role as perfectly as Crowder did last season. What are your thoughts on Tucker's fit?
I also just don't think he's quite what they need. You know, he certainly fits that bill in terms of like theoretically 3-and-D type forward, but he's not as consistent a three-point shooter as you might think if you haven't watched the Rockets a lot over the last couple of years.
Right.
And then defensively, I think duplicates some of what they already have. So I would be looking for someone who can do a little more offensively than PJ can.
Nema Bjelica, that's the name there. And, you know, for everybody complaining about Kelly Olynyk's defense or overall impact, which I think are really overstated, I think he's a lot better player than people think. For a variety of reasons, Bjelica would probably be much more frustrating. Your take on him?
Yeah, I think that's probably accurate in terms of the defense. The trade-off for that is, as you were alluding to with Olynyk, you know, the threat of his shooting. I mean, right. Bjelica is a legit shooter. Like, he actually changes the way that defenses will guard you a little bit. So I think, you know, from that perspective and just from the practicality standpoint of who can we actually get without breaking up the core of the team, he might be in the running for that tier of trade acquisition.
Yeah, he's a player that fits into Miami's trade exception. So that I don't think they'd actually necessarily even need to give up a player or asset in order to get him. So that would be interesting. Nikola Vucevic is a name that was linked via rumor today. I think the Kevin O'Connor, your colleague over at The Ringer, may have speculated that Miami has shown interest in Vucevic. I kind of shot it down because I just don't see Orlando actually trading Vuce. I mean, I covered the Magic for a few years there, and I know that organization pretty well. I just don't see that those – that interest might be legitimate. I just don't think the Magic are actually going to blow things up that quickly, even though maybe it might be in their best interest to do so, given all their injuries and everything else. But Vucevic and his fit in Miami, I think, would be spectacular. Like, he is as good a shooter as Meyer Leonard was last year, and a much better passer and shot creator. He's a much better rebounder. He's not a rim protector by any stretch, but at least he's a bigger body inside. And for Miami, they've, you know, been struggling on the rebounding edge. So a player like Vucevic, I think, would be fantastic. I just don't see that being realistic.
Oh yeah, the interest is obvious. I mean, he's a tremendous offensive player, especially. I mean, what's your vision? You mentioned the Myers-Leonard type comp of what a Heat offense would look like with him involved. Like, what do you think would be the optimal role for him there?
I mean, it'd probably be like that's a tough one. I guess because you've got either him or Bam being able to create from the high post there, that maybe they're passing. But I guess you could probably put Vooch in the low post and have him kick it out with his passing, more off ball cutting, because he'll command so much attention there in the low post. So I could see him in a situation where he'd be double teamed, and then somebody as savvy as a Duncan Robinson or Jimmy could move off ball to create options for others. And, or Jimmy could be cutting one way, drawing that attention. And then all of a sudden that would be a flare out for Duncan, where he would wind up being mostly wide up. And we were talking about getting more open looks for Robinson. And when you have a player like Vucevic, who's as good at scoring internally as he does, that would make things so much easier for everybody else on the floor. So I'd see a nice, you know, he'd be a perfect complement because of his passing, because of his scoring and everything else. So I think he'd be a really nice fit.
Oh, he'd be awesome. I mean, he's propped up what have been some spectacularly underwhelming Magic lineups this season. I mean, really the only reason they're competitive in any of their games, he's probably just, as you mentioned, just a little too rich for what they need here and what could be feasible. But if you could make that work, if there's really a scenario by which that could happen, I mean, that would be a tremendous team. And I think one that in a lot of ways completes the Heat more so than, you know, Kyle Lowry's name has been out there, some of these perimeter guys. If you can get a big like Vucevic though, who can duplicate but also build off of what Bam already gives you, I mean, that's a really strong fit.
Yeah, I like it too. To all my listeners, make sure you check out all of Rob's work. He had a recent piece over at The Ringer, How to Read a Room Service Menu Like an NBA Veteran, which was fantastic. A lot of great insight there. You didn't talk to anybody at the Heat. I don't know if their diet seemed like it would be so restrictive because of their constant body fat testing and everything else like that. They probably wouldn't have a lot of pleasure ordering from a takeout menu.
No, not a lot of dessert splurging and chicken fingers over there, I don't think.
No, definitely not. Not without Pat Riley calling you up at 3 a.m. if you're having your sleep disrupted by COVID testing, just imagine when Pat Riley sees that you're 1 degree over your normal body fat test. Anything else that you want to plug here while you're at it?
Well, now I just feel like I failed not trying to find the one player who ordered chicken wings and got a stern phone call in the morning when they saw it on the room service bill.
I can't. I'm trying to think right now who that might be. I'm probably Hero, who just seems like he's normally so slight anyway. And at his metabolism at 2021, he could probably continue to eat that kind of food. He's young enough. Like you hinted at it, there were players that always, especially when they're younger, they just eat whatever they want. And as they get older, they kind of start to figure it out. I think Hero's still in that room where, you know, he's probably the chicken tender type. I could see that happening. Bam, certainly not. Jimmy, absolutely not. Even a guy like Duncan, I can't see that happening. So I just, Kelly Olynyk has lost so much weight while he's here. Like you would think that maybe he has the look of a guy who probably orders chicken tenders at 3 a.m, but no, I don't think that he actually can do it. So no, not a lot of options there. They're probably a pretty boring ass team when it comes to takeout menus, that's for sure.
Well, I'm sure they've had their moments, you know, like in the historical Heat, maybe this is low hanging fruit, but then the chicken tenders might've been Dion Waiters territory.
That is low hanging. Look, you know, I am a Waiters apologist till the very end. You know, he did come into camp a couple of years ago in great shape, and then
he did.
And you know, it wound up being well, they didn't exactly appreciate his efforts anyway. And then, of course, he wound up burning some pretty bad bridges on his way out, but that's a whole other conversation. I remember going to the locker room, with Josh Richardson when he was a rookie and doing exactly what you're talking about. Like it was before a game and he's just piling, like it must have been like 6 or 7 chicken tenders. And I'm just thinking to myself, I don't even know how you could eat that many and still go out there and play at a high level. And sure enough, he did.
I'll always remember the Derrick Rose diet coming out of Memphis, which was, I think he would just down like 2 bags of gummy bears before a game, which that's some next level, just straight gelatin going into your veins. I mean, a lot of young guys do, honestly. I mean, some are more honest about it than others, but if you were to snoop around in some lockers, I bet you'd find a lot of bags of, you know, trolley bright crawlers and stuff like that.
All right. So nothing else to plug at this time?
A couple things in the hopper, but nothing imminent, I don't think.
Okay. Well, anyway, thank you so much for taking the time. Always great to talk to you and get your perspective on the Heat, because they've been an interesting team and it's been a very interesting season.
David, thanks so much.
Just a reminder, you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskYellowHeat. Be sure to please subscribe to the show and leave a review. I'm David Ramil signing off and thanking you as always for your support.